Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you're listening to Total EM. After some recent events and some longstanding concerns that I have had about restraint positions causing positional asphyxia, I decided that it was time to talk more about the subject and to go into a deep dive on it. For those of you who may know me through Facebook, it has already been posted a little bit there, but I wanted to go into more of the evidence and talk about some of the other factors that can come into play. So I decided to still make this a full blog and podcast, which is what you're going to see here. Let's start off first that there have been multiple instances of suspected or confirmed positional asphyxia in the past from restraints, and we've included an image that helps show one of these positions, which is basically a hogtie position. And what happens is that this can lead to death in extreme circumstances. Most recently, we have seen this with the case of George Floyd, which has led to protests and riots and other things as a result. Positional asphyxia is caused by difficulty breathing due to how someone is being held. And we don't always see this with restraints, but improper restraints has been a recurring concern. And what makes this so dangerous is a combination of factors, including metabolic acidosis, position, and decreased blood flow. Let's break this down a little bit further. Metabolic acidosis can occur in states of extreme stress or exertion. Think about someone who's on methamphetamine or cocaine or prolonged exercise or activity like marathons, or maybe if they're excited delirium, they're fighting back. Those are all potential causes. And when under metabolic acidosis, the body's going to attempt to get rid of that acidosis. And because of that abnormal pH and what the body can do quickly, that means blowing off carbon dioxide or CO2, which itself is an acid. This becomes complicated, though, by the physical restraint. In certain positions, such as laying prone and being pushed down to the ground by force on the back, head, neck, this can lead to having difficulty breathing, especially expanding that diaphragm enough to take a deep breath and blow all the CO2 out that you need to blow out. And as a result, that restrained position becomes more limiting because of that limited lung expansion. And if they cannot take a deep enough breath to help blow off that CO2 fast enough, the acidosis can worsen. There's also the issue with blood flow. Manual compression of arteries to the head and neck can further decrease the blood flow. Not enough blood to the vital organs, including the brain, makes it harder for everything to function, which means that eventually those functions like helping with breathing will become less and less, and that combination of those factors that we just talked about leads to unconsciousness. What becomes problematic is once that person is unconscious, the body will relax. It becomes less tense. And as the body is no longer tense, that means that you're no longer using those muscles to help protect your chest, to help protect the airway, and everything collapses as a result further. That lack of guarding, that lack of protection means that these people will have the inability to properly ventilate even further, which means that there's less and less oxygenated blood, and there's worsening acidosis by the inability to properly blow off that CO2. And eventually we get in this very dangerous cycle, which leads to death. What that means for us is that if we leave someone in a position for too long, even a short period of time carries the potential of being lethal. And without proper medical care, they will die. Even with proper medical care, resuscitation can be extremely difficult and is often unsuccessful. There is a common misconception, and I hear this in the medical field, first responders, and the general public, that the "I can't breathe" being said is enough to say, hey, that person is breathing adequately. And that's not true. If we take it in the literal sense, when someone says, "I can't breathe," then yes, they're not in respiratory arrest or they don't have complete occlusion of their airway, such as with choking. However, anything less than that, they can still mean it. It's not a time that we expect people to be able to fully describe and explain what is going on when they're restrained or in other difficult situations. "I can't breathe" can just mean I can't take a deep enough breath. And that's what's usually going on in these cases. So anytime that someone feels like they're unable to breathe adequately, we should treat this as an immediate life threat first until proven otherwise. There has been some discussion about traumatic asphyxia and strangulation, so I'm going to break that down a little bit as well. How does positional asphyxia differ from traumatic asphyxia? Well, simply put, traumatic asphyxia is a cardiovascular phenomenon resulting from a sudden dramatic increase in intrathoracic pressure from severe compression of the chest. Blood is forced back through the venous system, causing significant facial edema and jugular venous distension. It will lead to cyanosis of the upper extremities, head, and neck, with petechiae being present as well. This is usually very sudden and severe, such as with motor vehicle collisions, when someone hits the steering column very suddenly, very hard, and in farming accidents, when, say, a tractor lands on someone's chest or something else that's very heavy and very sudden in nature. Strangulation is also different from asphyxia. It is usually broken down to mechanical or vascular. When we're talking about mixed martial arts, the technique is usually vascular because it's much more quick than a mechanical strangulation. And the goal in MMA is for a quick loss of consciousness or to force the opponent to quit with a tap out. Mechanical strangulation, on the other hand, is usually seen with hanging or throttling someone. And this will usually leave evidence that can be seen on an autopsy, such as edema and contusions to the area that was strangulated, edema and crush injury to the larynx or trachea, fracture of the hyoid bone, and petechiae of the eyes. Using one of the examples that we just talked about, George Floyd, one of his initial autopsy reports said that there were no physical findings that support a diagnosis of traumatic asphyxia or strangulation. But that's no surprise, because what we're talking about is positional asphyxia. We just explained how traumatic asphyxia is from a sudden increase in intrathoracic pressure from a severe compression of the chest. Well, that's not what's going on in the case of George Floyd's death, as well as strangulation wasn't going on. They weren't throttling him. What instead was going on was the position itself was causing the asphyxia, along with other factors. And what this means is that with other autopsy reports, it was further supported that, okay, positional asphyxia was playing a role, and it was mentioned that, quote, weight on the back, handcuffs, and positioning were contributory factors because they impaired the ability of Mr. Floyd's diaphragm to function, end quote. Now you can see why this all continues to play a role and why positional asphyxia is still very dangerous in restraints. Now that we covered how positional asphyxia can occur, let us move on to some of the evidence. Quite a bit of evidence is older, with one of the examples being a retrospective case study of deaths in police custody and in the community dating from 1998. And in this, they discuss how excited delirium combined with positional or postural holds can lead to unexpected death. Drugs such as cocaine were also often present, but not at levels that were considered lethal. There was also a 1993 case report series involving 11 deaths of men restrained in a prone position by police. Three of these deaths, the men were considered psychotic, and the rest were considered delirious from drug use. All but two died in the hogtie position. There are some studies that help point to a little bit different direction, and that includes a 1998 paper that looked more into the hogtie position. They believed that from their findings that other factors contributed to the death that were more important, including drug use, physiologic stress, hyperactivity, hyperthermia, catechol stimulation, and trauma from struggling. Additionally, they concluded that body position alone does not cause hypoventilation, respiratory compromise, or positional asphyxia in the hogtie custody restraint position. Then there was a 1997 clinical study that was performed on this subject. They studied only healthy individuals and found, quote, no evidence of hypoventilatory respiratory failure or asphyxia as a direct result of body restraint position in healthy, awake, non-intoxicated individuals with normal cardiopulmonary function at baseline. More recently, a similar 2013 study again looked at healthy individuals, but they added weights. Once again, the researchers found no significant changes while weights up to 100 pounds were used, but they were only used for up to a few minutes at a time. It started out with 25 pounds, then 50 pounds, both at 5 minutes, and then 100 pounds for only 3 minutes. It is beneficial to look at the evidence from both sides, but we must remember that there are definitely limitations. For example, the people in the studies were healthy and in a well-controlled environment where there was no physical exertion, physiologic stress, intoxication, or trauma. They also did not have underlying cardiovascular problems. In the study with weights, they were large weights, and they would distribute throughout the entire back, limiting the pounds per square inch or PSI. A low PSI and of a weight far less than what we may see people being restrained is unrealistic. And the reason why I say that is because usually you have multiple people who are piling on these individuals very quickly, and they're usually using just their knees. So they have more concentrated pressure, which means increased PSI to fewer areas and allowing more people well over that 100-pound benchmark that was used in that 2013 study. While it would be difficult to replicate a study and include these limitations, they should still be recognized for what they are: limited studies and healthy individuals in controlled settings, meaning that for me, this is not enough to say, oh, this is a fine position, because obviously we're seeing people still die in these situations. Also mentioned from the studies is that it is important that these people are under some form of stress. This is quite common and does not excuse the position. A position that can compromise appropriate physiologic responses is still dangerous. And we still have to remember that there are factors contributing to the deaths mentioned that should only increase our concern in the ability for them to worsen a dangerous situation. We should not take the evidence to mean that these are safe positions, but rather that alternative forms of restraint should be used. Anytime these dangerous restraints are used, it should only be for a minimal amount of time and to allow for a safe transition to better forms of restraint, all while monitoring those restrained closely. I hope that you can take away some pearls from this and understand that, yes, the evidence may not all support that people will die from positional asphyxia, but there are factors that all contribute. And it's usually when we find this that a lot of people don't die from just one factor. There are other things that come into play, but how often do those things come into play in other deaths? And just talking about excited delirium in general, it is still very dangerous. So now that we add in a position where physiologically people cannot do what needs to be done to help keep them safe, this is all extremely concerning. And we must act as advocates to help encourage safe practices. Our goal should be to continue keeping our patients and those in police custody safe and prevent avoidable deaths. I hope you find this very beneficial and can take this and use this properly to help your patients and those in custody in the future. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.